There seldom seems to be any rest for the weary in Eugene, and by weary in this context, we mean the homeless people looking for places to sleep and the people looking for solutions to the issue. Monday night, the Eugene City Council passed an ordinance that would allow the creation of small overnight camps for homeless people at little or no cost to the city government, as projected. The council move comes after weeks of camping demonstrations under the banner of Eugene Sleeps, Sleeps being an acronym for Safe, Legally Entitled Emergency Places to Sleep, and at its face, that's what the council is now talking about providing. With us from the Eugene City Council, from Ward Number 7, Claire Surrett, and one of the supporters of the ordinance as well. Counselor, thanks for joining us today.
You bet. I'm pleased to be here.
Is the council action then a response to the Eugene Sleeps demonstrations?
Absolutely. I do think the demonstrations helped highlight the circumstances of people sleeping illegally in our parks and open spaces. But from my perspective, I think we were responding to the need versus the activism, which is very real. And the issue of people having no emergency shelter and then in many cases being forced, left with little option but to sleep illegally in our parks or open spaces really created, in my mind, a crisis that needed to be addressed.
Claire Surrett, any good knowledge or good guesses anyway on why Eugene seems to have so many homeless people?
Well, I actually don't think it's just a problem for Eugene. I know that Ashland has struggled with this in various ways as well. But I do think there's a historic aspect to it of being on the West Coast route, so to speak, for Grateful Dead concerts and other kinds of cultural activities that have attracted people to Eugene. We are a welcoming community in many ways. And then there's the aspect of the fact that Eugene is the county seat for Lane County, which means that that is where a majority of social services that are provided by the county are located. So we also become a magnet because of that.
Is it somewhat more of an issue in Ward 7, your part of the city of Eugene?
A little bit, because my ward contains quite a bit of mixed industrial land. So there are vacant plots of land along the train tracks and the river that tend to attract that kind of camping as well.
One of the things that the folks at the Eugene Sleeps protests have brought up, and this has brought up a fair amount, it seems, not just in Eugene, but just about anywhere there are demonstrations in favor of services for the homeless, is this concept of it shouldn't be illegal to sleep. And that's a tough one to counteract, isn't it?
I agree. And originally, when the Sleeps folks came to us, I was leaning towards the idea of temporarily lifting the ban on people sleeping in our parks. And the response that I got from my constituents and others in the community made me realize that that was not the kind of simple, easy solution that it appeared to be on the face of it, that we have created our city parks and our neighborhood parks for very specific reasons, and that does not include having people sleep overnight in them.
We're talking to Eugene City Councilor Claire Surrett from Ward 7 about this new ordinance set up to provide some temporary homeless camps for the homeless population in Eugene. You can join us on the exchange again, 800-838-3760 in Eugene and environs, anywhere in the listening area, really. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. So City Manager John Reese proposed the ordinance. Was the idea borrowed from any other jurisdiction?
I don't know if it was borrowed from a jurisdiction in the sense of camps being allowed by cities, but they were. His proposal is modeled on some best practices that have been shared with the city council from camps in Portland and Seattle. And I'll admit, I don't know if those camps in Seattle are sanctioned by the city or not. I don't have enough knowledge, but they have been operating for many, many years. And they operate on a self-managed model, and that's the model that the city manager has proposed for these temporary sites in Eugene.
So a self-managed model, and who ends up managing then?
Well, so it's a couple of different ways that it's going to work. First of all, the sites themselves, if they're not city-owned sites, because this ordinance does allow nonprofit organizations and private property owners in non-residential areas to allow a site to be located on their land. would create a site agreement for that site that would stipulate what the rules and parameters were. So it might be a site where folks can set up their tent and leave it there and come and go as they please, or it might be a site that's very limited in terms of access and people have to be there by a certain time and leave with their belongings by a certain time. So sites will vary in terms of those specifics. And then the ordinance allows for a site to engage a host, much like you would have at a state campsite. We have camp hosts who are not there as law enforcement, but there to just make sure folks are complying with the rules, that things are secure, that there's a general kind of community that's created at a site. And this is a model that we have heard about, and some of one of our city councilors has visited the camps in Portland and Seattle, where they self-manage. They don't just have one host in that case, because the camps are fairly large, but they have the members who of the community who live there contribute to security, contribute to cleaning up, contribute to the maintenance of the site. And so a camp host in this case would have similar responsibilities, though we don't imagine our camps being nearly as complex as the ones that are up in Portland. For example, I don't believe we will allow people to cook meals on these sites. There are many locations around Eugene where folks can get access to a free meal and food, so we would expect them to go make use of those services.
So as envisioned, it sounds like a real sort of temporary crash place for the night.
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's where the name Rest Stop came up, was this idea of just allowing people uninterrupted sleep during the night, because that was the main kind of human rights complaint that we were hearing from the sleep activist was, you know, people are just trying to sleep through the night, and because they're violating the law, police officers will come and rouse them at 2 o'clock in the morning from their sleeping spot in the park. Now, obviously, there are many other things going on besides just people sleeping in the parks that cause concern in terms of public safety. But at its core, that is what we are hoping to provide with these legally sanctioned places. So folks are sleeping there are no longer breaking the law. They can sleep through the night knowing that they have a minimum level of security, and they can get up in the morning and access services or go look for a job and do the things that might help them get out of this circumstance.
As written, though, is the idea that the place will clear out at 7 a.m., 8 a.m. or something and be nothing there but the portalette left behind?
It is not actually required that every site operate that way, but that could be one of the requirements for particular sites, depending on what else was going on around that site or on that site during the day.
All right, let's take a call. We have Steve and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about homeless camps in Eugene with City Council Member Claire Surrett.
Howdy. Seems that the city is taking the lead and being proactive and addressing this situation as opposed to, say, the county government. While back on the show, we had Sid Lycan on, and his attitude seemed to be, well, that's not the county's problem, that's a city problem, you know. And last I looked, you know, I was born here 68 years ago and was brought up with the idea in mind that Eugene is a part of the county. So has the county done anything really that could be considered proactive, and how do you coordinate with each other?
Steve, thanks for the question, although I think the impression was a little off.
Though I can understand why he might have that impression of the county's reaction. And I appreciate the question. The county, traditionally in the last decades, maybe 20 years ago, the county would have been considered the main provider of social services and expected to deal with these kinds of challenges. And over the decades, as the county resources have been severely drained, much of that burden really has shifted to the city of Eugene. Again, being the county seat, we have a multitude of very effective social service agencies. And I just want to say, those agencies are actually preventing people from becoming homeless. And so we do have a lot of services in place that are helping people stay in their homes and make sure they don't end up in having to use one of these rest stops. And the county still does contribute significant amounts of money to that social service system, and that's how we coordinate. It's a commission called the Human Services Commission that is housed in the county, is funded by the county, the city of Eugene, and the city of Springfield. Quite a bit of the money is pass-through money that we receive from the federal government and the state, and then fund the Human Services Commission, which distributes that money to the social service agencies in Eugene, Springfield, and other county cities.
Which answers the question then about, are there concurrent efforts along with the new ordinance on homeless camps to try to make sure that people either stop being homeless or don't get there in the first place? And the answer apparently is yes.
Yes. Now, I think the distinction is that with the recession, we saw many more people ending up on the streets than we had in years previously in a much greater rate. Catholic Community Services here says they saw an increase of 15%. This past year over years before in terms of how many people they served. And I would say, with all due respect to our county partners, they have not responded to that emergency in the way that the city now is. Now, obviously, the city also has taken time to figure out how we can respond, but that's the nature of government. We have many things we have to balance. We have many responsibilities that includes all the city residents, not just those coming to advocate for a particular solution. And so that's why I feel it took us this time to get to this place. We really needed to look at the ramifications of what we were proposing and try to find a solution that was, one, going to actually help people, not just be something nice to do, and two, wouldn't have a disproportionate impact on the surrounding neighborhoods.
Eugene City Councilmember Claire Surrett is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the new ordinance to provide temporary camps for the homeless. You can join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. So, Councilmember, as written, is the ordinance a pilot project?
You know, I don't think it has that word in it, but it is scheduled to sunset on March 31st, 2014, unless we take action to keep it in place or revise it or quit. So that gets us through the winter, which is an important benchmark, as you were commenting on the weather changing at the beginning of the broadcast. We're very aware it's been raining here in Eugene for the last few days, and that's a very serious situation. Over the last couple of years, we have had people die on the streets, and in part due to exposure.
But is there supposed to be one camp that's set up, and then after that, you'll take a look at whether the concept works well enough to try it at others?
No, actually, the ordinance gives the city manager the authority to set up as many camps as he can identify site agreements for. It does not limit it to try one and see how it goes, which actually, for me, was a very powerful part of the ordinance, because I was actually going to propose that we create two pilot sites, and after 30 days, if they were working, we identify more. But this actually lets the city manager begin one or two, or if he were able to identify more sites, and then he's responsible for seeing that the site agreements are maintained, and if a site is not working, he has the authority to shut it down immediately. Now, every site will be approved by the city council, so we will be seeing the proposals for these sites, and I expect the first two to be city-owned sites.
Any idea what those will be? Are there actual sites being proposed at this point?
Well, the sleeps activists have actually taken over a couple of sites that they think would be good places to start. They are vacant lots. One of them's along a fairly heavily traveled boulevard near the University of Oregon. It's just a weedy lot that's not being used. And they are calling those Whovilles, and folks in the community have stepped up and provided porta-potties for those sites without any cost to the city. And some of the leaders of Sleeps, I've encouraged them to meet with the City of Eugene staff and go through their site recommendations and work with staff to see if the sites that they're on now would work or if we need to ask them to move to different sites.
I mentioned the porta johns, the portable toilets, just in passing. But that is one of the requirements, right? There has to be one there, and is there a certain number per? These are capped at 15 people, aren't they?
Correct. Yes. So each site can have no more than 15 people, and provision of sanitation facilities is a requirement. If it doesn't necessarily have to be a portable toilet, if there was other sanitation facilities available on the site, they could make use of those.
But there must be some provision in here for police patrols or something. I mean, at some point, the city's going to incur some costs here, isn't it?
Well, just like they patrol my neighborhood on a regular basis. So it's not, it doesn't add any extra need to the workload. It's still a piece of land in a neighborhood, in a business district, whatever, that needs police presence. So it doesn't change that dynamic at all.
All right, so...
The value is that instead of people being hidden away because they know they're camping illegally and therefore being victimized by true criminals, in my mind, which has happened over the years, these folks are now out in the open and in a much more secure place where they can actually call on the police to help them because they are not themselves breaking the law.
Well, that's a really interesting perspective, though. So instead of hiding under a bridge or being in a place where they're technically trespassing, violating the law, they're really under the law now.
Exactly.
That's a big difference.
Yep.
So what's the length of stay? Was this any issue in developing the ordinance?
So, again, that would be worked out on a site-by-site basis. So that's the other piece of flexibility. Rather than the city council trying to decide what's the best approach, a site could decide that it's going to be a lottery system and whoever shows up and wins that lottery gets to camp there, or they may have a registration system where they say, all right, you folks are now registered and you can stay here for 30 days or 45 days. So that's going to be a site-by-site decision.
Now, if the council has to approve all the sites, though, it sounds like this is going to end up taking just a bit more time than if it were just a staff approval.
A little bit, but we have regular meetings between now and the holidays. So we meet every Monday and Wednesday, except the first week of the month. And so I don't think that will delay site approval in the way having to reapprove an ordinance, which then has a 30-day waiting period and has to have a public hearing. So it'll be a much more expedited process while still making sure that we're tracking where these sites are being set up.
We have an email here from Stephen in Eugene, apparently not the Steve you heard from already. He wants to know what kinds of safety measures there are to prevent and test for methamphetamine use and manufacturing at the camps.
Well, I don't think that anyone would have the capacity to manufacture at the camps. I'm not any kind of expert on that, but my understanding is it takes quite a bit of equipment and setup, and that just wouldn't be possible in these places. They'll be mostly quite public. excuse me. And in terms of drug use, I don't believe that there'll be drug screening to allow people to come onto these sites. We, of course, would like people to connect with services and get off of the drugs and actually bringing people out of the wetlands and the woods into a more public setting will help them access services more easily and perhaps get into treatment that they wouldn't otherwise have gotten into.
You had mentioned that these are supposed to be in non-residential areas. Are there any sorts of buffers, I mean, distance from residential zones, schools, churches, anything like that?
We didn't specify distance from, but the criteria for selecting sites does say they shall not be in a residential neighborhood or near a school. So the city manager will be basically having to interpret that for himself. And, you know, I can guarantee if he brings a site to city council for approval and one of the councilors spies that, you know, it's adjacent to a residential area or a school, that site would not be approved.
Let's take a call here from Nicole in Redding, California. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Eugene City Council Member Claire Surrette.
Hello.
Hi.
I really have heard before your discussion on homeless there in Oregon, and I really think you're doing a wonderful job. And I was wondering, is there some place I could get the information that you have for your homeless that I could submit to the city hall or city council?
Is the resolution, I mean, rather the ordinance online, Claire? Is that something that Nicole could pick up?
Yes, it should be listed on under the city council section of the City of Eugene website. And there's also just a general information form that you can fill out saying, I'm looking for this information. And we have a community service person who should respond to that and help you connect with that if you go to the City of Eugene website.
Right. Nicole, thanks for that call. So, Claire Surratt, I mean, obviously so many things have been tried to address the issue of people needing places to stay overnight in Eugene. Does this feel like you're accomplishing something here? Does it feel like a Band-Aid? I mean, describe what you're feeling now.
Well, I would have to admit that it is a Band-Aid. Homelessness is a ongoing concern for Eugene and our nation. But I feel personally that this is as one of our city councilors said, a stopgap measure to provide people with relief. And I think people need relief. We do have people who are actually working jobs, trying to raise a family, and they find themselves in circumstances where they are no longer able to afford a home. And if we can give them some temporary respite from the rain and the insecurity that comes along with illegal camping and connect them with services and jobs, then they can improve their circumstances and move on back into housing.
So how soon might the first of these open?
I hope within the month.
All right. Claire Surratt, Eugene City Council Member, Ward 7. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
All right. We'll check out down the road and see how the provision for people, places for people to sleep overnight in Eugene is going. That'll do it for this segment of The Exchange. We'll take a short break and return with the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 26th of September, 2013. It's the birthday of George Gershwin, the composer, born Brooklyn, 1898, who, at the age of 19, along with his childhood friend Irving Caesar, wrote a song called Swanee, which Al Jolson made into a huge hit, and George Gershwin was on his way. It's the birthday of T.S. Eliot, Thomas Stearns Eliot, born into a prominent Unitarian family in St. Louis in 1888. The man who wrote, "Shall I part my hair behind? Do I dare to eat a peach? I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach." From the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, 1915. It was on this day, 1957, the musical West Side Story opened on Broadway after a great deal of trouble. The choreographer Jerome Robbins had the idea 10 years before of a retelling of the Romeo and Juliet story set in the streets of New York, and he got Arthur Lawrence to write the story and Leonard Bernstein to write the music. And Lawrence wrote a draft of a musical he called East Side Story, in which there was a Catholic gang, the Jets, and a Jewish gang, the Emeralds, and it was set during the Easter Passover season. They put that aside, and then in 1955, Lawrence and Bernstein were working in Hollywood. They were sitting by a swimming pool at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and they were talking about the news, including gang violence in Los Angeles between whites and Hispanics. So they decided to change the story, have a Polish-American named Tony and a Puerto Rican named Maria, and East Side Story became West Side Story. They had a hard time getting producers interested. They thought the story was too depressing, too much like opera. They couldn't find a lyricist. Finally, they got Stephen Sondheim, who was in his mid-20s, and he convinced a friend of his, Hal Prince, to be the producer. It was hard to find actors. They needed leads who were good singers, who were actors, who could dance, and who looked like teenagers. And then there was a problem with the billing. Jerome Robbins insisted on being the director. He also wanted a credit that the show was, quote, conceived by Jerome Robbins. So the creators were barely speaking to each other when it opened. In general, West Side Story got pretty good reviews when it opened. But that year, all of the major Tony Awards went to The Music Man, a little musical about a small town in Iowa. Here's a poem for today by Kirsten Dierking, Sailing on Lake Superior. Before us now, the edge of the earth, below us the nearly endless cold, around us nothing but shimmering water, the miles of empty and sparkling blue. For a few hours the sail fills on toward infinity. Shadows of our delicate bodies ebb and flow across the deck of our delicate boat. What if the beautiful days, the good and pacific temperate moments, weren't just lovely, but everything? What if I could let it fall away in the wake, that ache to extract meaning from vastness? Let this suffice, the ease of thinking it all goes on, whether we're here to see it or not, the splashing waves, the sun-tipped gulls arcing across the radiant world. Sailing on Lake Superior, a poem by Kirsten Dierking from Northern Oracle, published by Spout Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. Available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Joy Biles with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.